Good evening, good morning, wherever you may be around the world. Thank you for tuning in to the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM, sitting in for George Norrie. I'm Dave Schrader, your host this evening and tomorrow night. Tomorrow we have an amazing little show we've put together for you. Leading into the holiday season of Halloween, I wanted to bring out some of our best spooky stories. And tomorrow we're going to talk to survivors of three of the most famous hauntings on the planet. Three hauntings that spawned three of the most famous and horrific movies in cinematic history. From the Amityville Horror, Christopher Lutz will join us. The youngest surviving member of the Lutz family will be here. Andrea Perrin, the sister and oldest sister from the Conjuring movie, will be on with us. And from The Haunting in Connecticut, Carmen Reed will join us. All three will be here to interact with one another, interact with you. We'll hear about their stories, some of the creepiest aspects of their tales, maybe some information you may not have heard before about their stories. And we'll clear up some of the misinformation as well. Plus, we'll take your calls if you have your own experiences or you have questions and want to talk to experts that have survived these exact type of encounters and you want their input tomorrow night. It is open. You can be a part of the show. Get the advice directly from them as we talk. 4 hours tomorrow, extreme paranormal haunting survivors. That's what's on tap for tomorrow. Tonight, joining me, Karen Smurl from the Smurl Family Haunting. It is one of the most chilling real-life ghost stories out there. Everybody's familiar now with The Conjuring and Conjuring 2 with the names of Ed and Lorraine Warren, two of the world's most famous demonologists. Well, they were called in to help an average American family who were being assaulted by forces too awesome, too powerful, and too dark to be stopped. It's a true story supported by dozens of eyewitnesses, neighbors, priests, police, journalists, researchers, and more. Karen Smurl is here to talk to us about her family's experiences in one of the most chilling real-life ghost encounters you'll ever hear. We're also going to open up phone lines in the last 2 hours and start the ball rolling for the Halloween season. We want to hear some of your encounters with the paranormal. Kicking off hour three from Ghost Adventures on the Travel Channel, we've got Aaron Goodwin joining us for a short time. He's going to share one of his favorite creepy adventures. We'll talk a little bit about the Halloween special that airs tomorrow on Travel Channel. And then we'll take your calls for the remainder of the show. So if you've got a great paranormal experience, ghosts, werewolves, vampires, Ouija board, demons, angels, anything you want to chat about, we'll open up the phone lines and we'll start off the holiday Halloween weekend right. Speaking of starting it off right, I'm Dave Schrader. I'm the host of Darkness Radio. I've been now sitting in for about 4 years as one of the lucky recurrent hosts of Coast to Coast AM. And on our show, every Halloween season, we do a little thing called Halloween for Hunger. We work with Second Harvest Heartland in a way to affect and help out people right here in the United States. They have such an amazing buying power that every $1 we raise during our campaign for Halloween for Hunger, every $1 supplies 3 meals for families and people in need right here in the United States. It's a great way to help out. This is all you need to do. It's so simple. I'm going to make it as easy as I possibly can. Two different ways to help out. One, go to darknessradio.com. Darknessradio.com. Right on the front page, there's a banner for our Halloween for Hunger campaign. Click that banner, go in and make a donation. Any size donation. $1. I know you've got it in the couch cushions. You probably got it in the ashtray of your car. $1 will feed one person 3 square meals. So we will take $1. I know this is an extensive, expanse audience of Coast to Coast AM. So give us a hand with this so we can hit our $10,000 mark. Currently, just from the Darkness Radio audience alone, we're at $6,000. We would love to hit the $10,000 mark with your help and blow well past it. This is going to be open for any of you listening to the archives of the show. We're going to keep this open until midnight on November 5th. But you can go make donations right now by going to darknessradio.com. Click on the banner, and then you'll be able to make your donations. Or if you can't, just email me, dave@darknessradio.com, and I'll send you the link to make it even easier. dave@darknessradio.com. Be a part of the solution. Reach out and help our neighbors in need right here in the United States by donating to Second Harvest Heartland and help us hit our goal of $10,000. When we come back, the Smurl Haunting on Coast to Coast AM. From 1974 to 1987, the Smurl family were subjected to the mercy of ghosts and dark forces. Their story involves journalists, demonologists, the Roman Catholic Church, and a multitude of witnesses, eyewitnesses that saw the activity take place. It caught the attention of the media, which resulted in several published articles, a book, a TV movie, and even attracted the infamous paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren. Tonight, we're going to discuss the Smurl family haunting. Joining us on Coast to Coast AM, Karen Smurl. Karen, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Hi, Dave. Thank you so much for having me.
I know this is, we're coming into the Halloween season. I wanted to share some real strange encounters with the paranormal and reading about your family's events, seeing the movies, reading the book, reading all the articles that have been out there. This story never ceases to amaze me, especially with the amount of people involved and neighbors and police and journalists witnessing strange phenomena. Talk to us a little bit about your family prior to moving into this home. Was there a paranormal element that was always a part of your family?
Yes, but we didn't. That's something we didn't really know till later on. When we were old enough, my dad started to tell us stories about things that he saw when he was a little boy. But prior to moving into this house, I wasn't even born yet. They actually purchased the home in 1970, about 73. There was a big flood in this area in northeastern Pennsylvania. Hurricane Agnes came through and flooded the whole area in 1972. My parents lost everything, and that's how they acquired the home. They purchased the home, my grandfather and my father together, my family on one side and my grandparents on the other. So I wasn't even born until 1978. So at that time, it was just my parents and my two older sisters. It really did start then. It started about 73 with little things. The whole family didn't know. My sister was seeing things. Things would go missing as they were renovating, but nothing big. Just little things. Nothing that really anybody would say, wow, something paranormal is going on here. So prior to that home, in the previous home, they did not report any, it's not something they brought with them to the new home. There was no activity, paranormal activity in the previous home.
How long after they moved into the home did the activity begin to ramp up?
Like I said, little things that had been happening that they didn't realize were paranormal until later on. But I would say it really ramped up about around 1980 is when it started to be, a full-blown haunting, where things were not only disappearing now, but people were being touched or pushed, or people were actually seeing apparitions and things like that. So I would say about 1980 is when it really started to kind of get out of hand.
So your family had been in that house for a considerable amount of time already before the activity got to a very kind of malevolent level.
That's correct. Like I said, it sounds kind of typical and cliche. As most movies start with, paranormal stories tend to start with, we bought this house and we were renovating. I mean, I hear that a lot. I'm sure you do too. It was, like I said, it was little things. It was my dad and my grandfather maybe fixing things and maybe tools were going missing. And then, they'd show back up, but they were always blaming us kids. Like, I just had that hammer. Where did you take, who took the hammer? And then, he turns back around and there it is. So it was like little things, electrical issues, plumbing issues, things that they just thought, okay, this is an old house. Again, they didn't put those things together until later. So it kind of started out with little things and progressed over the years. And it took quite a while, but around 1980 they were there about maybe 6 or 7 years before it really got scary.
And what's interesting now is that you've definitely involved yourself in the paranormal field and looking into the darker side of things. Why do you think it would take such a long time for a haunting of this style to kick up? You would think if there were dark forces at play, they would have been around the entire time. What drew them, or what drew the attention to your family and caused it to escalate, do you believe?
That is a really good question. And, once the Warrens got involved, they did really say, with so much energy in the home. You know, four children, you've got teenagers, and I don't think, I honestly don't think that, you know, it took so long. As my mom and dad always describe it, is just that, you know, being that this was their first, you know, encounter, you know, they weren't paranormal investigators. They didn't, you know, study that kind of thing. They blew it off. You know, they kind of blew everything off until it was no longer able to be blown off. When people started to get pushed and shoved and scratched and things like that, then they were like, okay, something's going on. But it just kind of always brushed everything off as, okay, we have kids, okay, we have bad luck, you know, things like that. But why did it take so long? It's really amazing that it took 8 years, but, you know, it's not uncommon. I've heard these things before from people that I've helped, you know, and I've heard, oh, we were there 5 years and then all of a sudden, or we were there 6 or 7 years and then all of a sudden. I don't have an answer to that. Why that happened. I really don't. And especially since we were, you know, a Catholic family and always going to church. I don't know why it happened at all. We still don't have definitive answers now, Dave.
Right. So it's not like your family wasn't involved in seances. You weren't playing with a Ouija board or summoning demons in the basement. Right.
Yeah. Nobody was playing with the Ouija board. Nobody was involved in the occult. No one was involved in witchcraft of any kind. No seances, no tarot cards. Nothing that you would typically associate with opening up some type of doorway or inviting something in.
And isn't it strange, though? I mean, as a researcher and somebody who understands kind of the malevolent darker forces now, that with as much work as you do in this and the people you speak to, doesn't it seem to be a weird jump from, oh, playful ghosts that are opening doors or moving keys or moving, you know, furniture, moving items and swapping them out? You know, that's more like a prankster. That's more of a, you know, a playful ghost, it would seem. And then all of a sudden, then it slowly starts to progress to the point where people are being touched. They're being pushed. They're being shoved. They're being molested. I mean, that seems like a strange progression, because if it's evil, you would think it would be evil all along.
Right. Well, you know, from working in this field too, and just the things that I've learned over the years, you know, the demonic plays games. And I guess the best way I can describe it to your audience is this. You know, it's not always, you know, in your face. You know, it's not typical, like, you know, something's going to jump out, boo. It's not that way all the time. It's not always a physical thing. The devil not only, you know, comes at you in a physical way, but and wears on you mentally, emotionally. It will attack any weakness that it can find. Those little things, like my sister, like I said, my sister started to notice things before anyone. She was, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old, and before I was even born, she would see things, and, you know, she would tell my mom, and my mom, you know, typical, hey, you're a little kid, okay, you're dreaming, there's no monsters in your closet, that kind of thing. And the devil will literally try to turn you against each other and also isolate you. You know, it will go after one person at a time. It will go after one family member. We had, what, 6 people on one side of the duplex and 2 on the other. It will go after one person and not the rest of the family, because it wants that one person to think, I'm going crazy. Nobody believes me. Like, I'm going nuts, and isolate you and emotionally and mentally wear you down.
Your understanding of the demonic realm now, you know, I wonder if the moving of things, the shuffling of items, what we would think of as just kind of an innocuous movement, something very benign, is it some kind of manifestation in the early stages of this is all the energy that it has? And the more you start to take notice of it, the more powerful it starts to become. And
absolutely.
And almost like a baby coming to power in this house. Do you think that there's something to be said about that? Or do you think that maybe there were ghosts there to begin with, and that attracted darker forces who eventually pushed them aside and kind of took over with their own hijinks?
And absolutely, I do think that. And I have a few friends that have been demonologists for many years. They've got 40 combined years of experience, and they kind of actually just explained it to us that way. And they said, isn't it weird that, you know, at first it kind of tries to, like, hide You know, it, like you said, do little things, push little things, make little noises. But then once you start to realize, okay, that wasn't just a normal bump in the night. That wasn't just a house settling. Once you start to realize that, and then you start to say something's going on here, and then you realize there is something here, you know, and it's almost like it kind of, yeah, it's an energy that fuels that. And it's like, okay. And then as time goes on, it's like, okay, well, now they know we're here. We're going to stop kind of hiding. We're just going to full blown, you know, come at them. But it's interesting that you mention, you know, spirits that were already there. Once the Warrens got involved, and there's so much surrounding the case that still we talk about to this day, and we say, we wonder if it was this, and we wonder if that was that. That piece of property, you know, it's a coal mining town. We've got so much energy in this area. It's a coal mining town. There was a lot of disaster. We've got the river running through here. There was a lot of witchcraft in that area for many years. There was battles that were fought there in the 1700s with settlers from Connecticut. There's so much that happened in that area, and people always tried to say, you know, it's this land, it's this property, what have you. When Lorraine Warren got involved, one of the things that she said is, I sense four spirits here. Two are human. One is, you know, a troublemaker, and one is demonic. So according to her, there were two human spirits there, and again, a troublemaker, like a poltergeist, and then the demonic. And she did say that the demonic entity was using the human spirit, kind of like puppets, you know, do my dirty work, help me aggravate these people, help me drive them crazy.
There was no, I mean, was there an official death ever recorded at that home that you're aware of?
At that particular home, I believe there was, actually, no, not prior to it. There was a death after, but not before. Interestingly enough, there were actually two deaths in the home after we sold it. Kind of tragic as well.
Wow.
Not before. Mm-mm.
And we'll discuss that a little bit later on as the story opens up. I want to cover that. Two deaths after you move out. That's got to be a strange feeling and a conflict as well for your family.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the part that never really makes sense to me is, and you know, I've been investigating this pretty steadily now for 11 years, is the renovation. Oh, once they started, changing the walls. Or, you know, I believe, okay, maybe if you are really an earthbound spirit and you've decided to stay here because this is your home, this is where you feel comfortable, I could understand maybe getting a little irritated that people are moving things or changing what mm-hmm. you liked it to be. So I could understand that kind of scenario. But the idea that there maybe were demons there sleeping all along, and me knocking down the wall and putting in a hot tub suddenly unearths, you know, Satan's army into my home. I mean, doesn't that even sound, and, you know, your family's survivors of this kind of thing, but doesn't that sound so far-fetched to believe that it's just something as simple as redecoration
irritates the
underworld?
I do not think that a renovation is unleashing the devil or evil spirits. Maybe human spirits that are maybe trapped there, maybe that are just like, hey, this was my house for 30 years. What the heck are you doing? But definitely not demonic. I don't think it's, you know, by tearing down a wall, you're opening the gates of hell and letting the demons in. Absolutely not. We were also told, and this is why this is such a multi-layer story. People are saying, well, how come you went through such terror and you didn't play with Ouija boards and you didn't invite it in. Prior to us moving in, actually one of the neighbors had told us that a very old woman had lived there. And the day she left, they took her out of her home. I don't know if it was to put her, you know, in a nursing home or something to that effect. But she had lived there for so long. And she said, you know, I cursed this property. And she, I guess, yelled some crazy things as they were taking her away. And the original deed to the property, we never found out what this meant, but my parents' lawyer has now passed. But when he was digging into the property itself and the original deeds and land deeds and things like that, back from when it was, you know, farmland, he went way back. But it did mention, my mom does have a copy of this, just so you know. We do physically have a copy of this. It does say that whoever shall live on this land is in danger from injuries by creatures, and no homeowner shall have, there's like a legal document stating, you know, whoever Whoever lives here, we're not liable for whatever happens to whoever lives here.
A disclaimer for the house. We have to take a break. Karen Smurl, our guest this evening. If you've missed any part of tonight's show and you'd like to catch up, become a Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com. Get a one-year subscription. Breaks down to just 15 cents a day to give you over 5 years of past archives so you never have to miss a minute of the best in overnight talk radio. Stay tuned. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM. If you like what you hear on Coast to Coast AM, you're going to love what you see on Beyond Belief. That's George Norrie's TV show. Check out beyondbelief.com. The TV show streams incredibly fast, has fascinating topics, and it's access for you to keep up with the amazing things that you hear on Coast to Coast AM with a visual perspective. All of the great insight and interviews that George Norrie presents on this show, he fleshes out in an even bigger way on Beyond Belief. So check it out for yourself, beyondbelief.com. You can find links to that and more information as well at Coast to Coast AM. And while you're there, check out the link for ParanormalDate.com. Halloween, just a few days away. Wouldn't it be great to meet that special somebody to go out and enjoy the pub crawls with in your costumes, to kick off this new season coming into the holidays with somebody special that likes what you like? All the things you hear on this show, ghosts, UFOs, conspiracies, monsters, myths, legends, and more. You can find those same people at ParanormalDate.com, now closing in on over 54,000 members. It's free to sign up, and if you decide you want to stay on, there are codes to get you a discounted rate, so please check out ParanormalDate.com while you're visiting CoastToCoastAM.com. I'm your host for the evening, Dave Schrader. Our guest this evening, Karen Smurl, is talking to us about her family haunting. And the Smurl family began experiencing unusual occurrences in 1974, reporting that a television set burst into flames, strange stains would appear, pipes would begin leaking even though they were reportedly fixed by a plumber, scratches would appear on the paintwork in bathroom fittings. And by 1977, things got worse. Everything from toilets flushing without people there, footsteps being heard on the stairs, chest drawers opening and closing, slamming and opening, radios working when they weren't even plugged in, and rocking chairs. Every possible thing you could think of from a horror movie, including foul, rancid, sour smells that would fill the house. In 1985, John and Mary exclaimed that they could hear loud, obscene language emanating from the house. Jack and Janet's house often became extremely cold and was filled with some kind of energy. Our guest, Karen Smurl, will tell us more about her family's haunting, the way they dealt with it, and what type of haunting were we dealing with? This sounds like a multi-layered haunting, from poltergeist activity to residual ghosts to intelligent ghosts to demonic infestation. That's what we'll cover next on Coast to Coast AM. We're back on Coast to Coast AM, sitting in for George Norrie. I'm Dave Schrader. Thank you for joining us this evening. And let me tell you really quickly, we've got something fantastic going on, and we'd love for the Coast audience to help us out. As the host of Darkness Radio, heard Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. till midnight, we do a campaign every year called Halloween for Hunger, where we aid Second Harvest Heartland. They are a food shelf system that feeds the needy and the hungry right here in the United States. And their buying power is so amazing that $1 supplies 3 meals to one person. That's right, just $1, something we all take for granted, that loose change in the couch cushions or in your car can feed one person for 3 meals in one day. We're trying to raise $10,000 by Halloween for our Halloween for Hunger campaign, and you can help. We've already raised $6,000 this week through Darkness Radio, and I know the Coast audience can help us achieve greater. Here's what you can do. Just go to darknessradio.com. You'll find the banner there for Second Harvest Heartland. Click it and make a donation so that it goes in under our drive. We can keep track of it and know. We're going to keep this open till November 5th. So any of you listening to this on the podcast form, feel free to help us out and join in. Again, even something as small as a $1 donation will help out in feeding somebody 3 square meals for an entire day. Be a part of the solution and help us out. Give back to the community. It helps right here, our neighbors in the United States, get fed. This is a tough time of year. They could use the help. We could use your help to be a part of this. So you can go check out darknessradio.com, click on the banner, or you can email me, dave@darknessradio.com. That's dave@darknessradio.com, and I will send out a link to you so that you can make a donation and be a part of this. I want to thank George George Norrie and Lisa Lyon for allowing me to do this. We began it last year and reached almost $8,000 in donations. This year, we want to hit $10,000. That will supply 30,000 meals to families in need. So thank you very much for being a part of this with us. Karen Smurl, our guest, as we discuss her family haunting. Karen, this sounds like a multi-layered type of haunting. I mean, it sounds like you've got a bit of the residual, that kind of energy that kind of plays over and over in the house. It seems like you've got some intelligent, interactive hauntings with shadow figures and things moving about. But it also seems like you've got this kind of chaotic poltergeist activity. Do you think that any one of those was a little bit more powerful than the other, or did they all seem to have domain in your home?
Well, like I said, I do believe that Lorraine was right. I do think that the demonic was kind of using all of those energies, like kind of like putting together his little armies, you know what I mean? Using, like I said, using them as puppets to do his dirty work. That's honestly what I think. That's what it felt like.
The poltergeist style activity, and this is something that fascinates quite a bit of people. Poltergeist is kind of this energy, this chaotic energy, things that happen, the doors slamming and drawers slamming and things stacking or piling. Now, there's a very famous photograph of like these chairs kind of up in a strange pyramid. It always seems to show up with your story. Is that a photograph from the haunting that took place at your home?
That is absolutely not.
Okay, yeah, I wanted to point that out because a lot of people have asked, oh my God, is this from that? And I wanted to get some clarification. But yeah, you've got this strange poltergeist activity. Now, a lot of times we have what's called a poltergeist agent, one person in the household that it seems to focus around. Was there a sister or your mother or anybody that really seemed to take the brunt of the activity?
In the beginning, it was definitely my mom. It definitely started as my mom, but it, as time continued, it kind of, once the family as a whole said, okay, something is definitely going on. Once it stopped being individualized and, you know, this person was being picked on and that person at a different time or being, you know, singled out, then it kind of became, you know, then it started to kind of hand it out equally.
All right. And was there any kind of, and I know this is a tough question and nobody wants to have it asked, but, you know, so many of the listeners are going to be curious and they, you know, watching the movie and even reading the book, sometimes it seems to call into question the mental stability of your mom and father during this situation. You know, was there any kind of medical issues or mental breakdown issues, anything like that, that were really transpiring aside from this activity itself wearing you down? Could that have anything to do with it?
As people ask me all the time too, has anybody ever had counseling? Has anybody, you know, I'm an investigator too, and I help people. We have to ask those tough questions. We do. And I'm one of the biggest skeptics out there because that's how you can't go into a situation saying, oh, it's definitely a ghost just because that's what I lived through. I'm very skeptical when I help somebody. I ask all the tough questions, so I never get offended by those. There was no mental health issues. We didn't have any drug issues, alcohol issues, you know, anything like that beforehand. Absolutely in the beginning when, you know, my mom, the movie depicts my mom's scenario very well because she did feel singled out for quite a while. She was a stay-at-home mom. You know, she had four kids that were in school and a husband who went to work every day. So she was home all the time. We got to leave the house. She was there all the time. At first, my father didn't believe her. You know, she had all these things happening, and he was telling my dad, and my dad's like, oh, you need to get out of the house. You know, you need to go hang out with your friends. Get out with the girls for a while. Go have a night, you know. Go get your hair done, something. You need to get out of here. And she's like, no, I'm telling you, something is going on here. He just, you know, put it off. I just kept putting it off with her as stress. You know, you have four kids, you're home all the time. But she was like, no, you're not listening. So she felt singled out at first. She felt like she was going crazy. She did doubt herself. And, you know, once that my father finally had something happen to him that made him go, wow, something is going on, I think that was the biggest relief for my mom because she did. My mom felt very alone in the beginning. because she honestly thought she was losing her mind. So it was a really, even though we were still going through it and it was getting worse, she was so relieved when everybody else started to see this. And not just family members, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, neighbors, her best friend, people coming into the home, you know, friends that would stay over, other family members. She was just so relieved. Like, thank God it's not just me.
Right. And what's so intriguing about your story, you have stories like Amityville, you have stories like Haunting in Connecticut, and even the Haunting in Georgia, things along those nature. And it always seems to have this kind of isolationist. The neighbors don't want to talk about it. The neighbors are very hush-hush. As a matter of fact, it's an embarrassing nature or element to the story. And you know, a lot of times we'll really distance themselves from this.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be very easy for your neighbors to have turned and said, oh, they're crazy, this is ridiculous, but the neighbors stood by you. Now, there's a very powerful scene that's depicted in the movie, and I, again, needing to know how much of it is reality, your family was gone. Nobody was in the house.
Mm-hmm.
But there was activity taking place that was so loud and violent that neighbors actually physically called the police in on that. Is that true?
Absolutely. And the gentleman who lived right next door immediately, the only thing separating our house and their house was just a single car driveway, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he was a retired police officer. So he's even, you know, he's even, I don't want to say skeptical, but he's used to investigating, you know, crime scenes and things like that. And, asking those questions, and having doubt and, you know, they were the neighbors that we said, okay, listen, we're going away for the weekend. Keep an eye on the house. You know, you always have that neighbor or somebody that collects my mail, you know, check on the house,
right?
See anything, call the police. They were it. So, you know, they always had their eyes open. And I mean, it got so bad the one night, and they did. They honestly thought somebody was being murdered in the house. They said they heard the most god-awful screaming and screeching and howling and lights flashing and, you know, curtains flapping and windows opening and closing. They said it was like a complete, just crazy, off-the-wall party going on in there. And they did. They called the police. And the police showed up. And they did also, when the police got there, they saw the same thing. And once they, you know, did have access into the home, of course, you know, nothing was going on inside, and the police officer was like, never going back to that house. And
right, so the police stood outside, and they could see the flickering of lights on the shades. Yeah. They could hear the screams, the yells, the bangs, the pounding, which sounds like a domestic dispute going on in the house.
Right.
And do they forcibly enter?
The neighbor let them in, and, you know, they just quick looked around, but he said, you know, I swear there's somebody in there. He said, listen, they're in New Jersey. They have family. We lived in Pennsylvania. They're like, they have family in New Jersey. My father's sister lived there, and we would go down frequently in the summertime. You know, they had an in-ground pool, horseshoes. We'd go hang out for 3-4 days at a time in the summer, cookouts, that kind of thing. And he's like, they're not even in the state. So I'm telling you, they weren't here at all today. Nobody's here.
Right.
You're not even the dog. They take the dog with them. No, the house is completely empty on both sides.
What do the police do at that point? I mean, they've just entered an abode where they've heard all of this, seen this. They get in, and there's nothing. There's nothing out of place. There's nobody bleeding. There's no people there. How do they react to this, aside from, yeah, we're not going back to that house? I mean, did they keep an eye on it while your family was gone? What? How did that work out?
They did. And, you know, I'll tell you what, the police were great. I mean, it was a small town, and my parents were very involved in everything. So, you know, there were some people that turned their backs on us, but mostly everybody, like I said, from the police to the neighbors, most of them, you know, kept an eye out for everybody. You know, you watched each other's houses, you watched each other's property, you know, you cared about each other. And luckily we did have that support. So, you know, they did watch the house the rest of the week that we were gone, just to make sure, you know, nothing was going on. But yeah, I mean, they were just, I actually just was contacted by a granddaughter of one of the police officers, and she said, to this day, my grandfather tells that story, and he still said, like, to this day, I would never go back into that house ever again.
that's the frightening aspect, right? I mean, when you hear these stories, and again, you weren't around for a lot of this activity and stories, and you hear this from, you know, not just crazy Aunt Lila or Uncle Drunk Larry who comes by to tell strange stories. You're hearing this from family members. You're hearing this from the media. You're hearing this from law enforcement. But why do you think people are still so skeptical of this story, Karen? Why are people questioning it when there are so many aspects of it that are well documented?
You know, it's that's a tough question. And like I said, I'm even very skeptical myself when it comes to stories. I want to know. And with some of these other stories, like you said, there's not a lot of documentation of neighbors or other families outside the immediate unit that experience things. So, you know, I have my questions about those stories. And if you're going to be an investigator, you have to. It's like being a police officer. You can't go in just to believe in everybody's story because you'll never get anywhere.
Right.
But, you know, if it doesn't happen to you, it's hard. You know, if somebody came to me, I believe in all kinds of stuff. There's so many things out there that we don't know about. And even the people who think they know the most about the hauntings and, you know, demonologists think they know everything. We're never going to truly know all the answers until we're past this life. But, you know, if it doesn't happen to you, sometimes you can't wrap your head around it. You know, what if I wasn't born into this situation? What if I didn't grow up experiencing these things? What if I didn't have the gifts like this, being sensitive and things like that now? Where would I be now? Maybe I wouldn't believe, you know? Sometimes it takes somebody to experience things for themselves. And I never blame people for that. I never, you know, I never argue with people who say they don't believe. I never get into those fights. What I tell people who say they don't believe me, I say, that's your opinion. And I truly hope that you never have to go through a situation like that to be that terrified to actually believe.
The Lutz children dealt with this. Not only did they have to deal with the horrific nature of what happened to them and their family in Amityville, but the aftermath of the way they were treated and the way people looked at them. Did that happen to the Smurl family as well?
Once the media got involved, it did turn into a circus. And of course there were naysayers, and it was a tougher time. And I am friends with Christopher Lutz, and you know, we do get to talk and we share our stories and we confide in each other. And I'm also friends with a few other haunting survivors and demonic survivors. And we do have many of the same similar stories. And unfortunately, you know, you have to deal with the naysayers. I've even had, I can't say what, there's another radio station out there now. And there's a gentleman who works for that radio station now that actually wrote for the local newspaper where I grew up. And he just blasted us nonstop. Just nonstop every day. And then I just found out he moved back from California, actually, and he's hosting a local show. And I just found out like 2 weeks ago that he's again on the radio blasting us 30 years later. Like he just doesn't have anything better to do. And he's really nasty about it. He's not a skeptic. He's just very nasty. And still to this day says it was, you know, sewer gas. He still says it was mass hysteria.
And that's because he did a pretty thorough investigation himself and had feet on the ground witnessing everything. That's not how it happened, Karen?
Absolutely.
You mean he's sitting in the comfort of his own home and he's making up the idea and hasn't actually talked to the people that witness this, like the police and the journalists and the neighbors? He's going strictly off of his own ideas?
I'll tell you what. one of the most ridiculous things that I ever heard was my dad, when I was about 5 or 6 years old, my father had water on the brain. And he actually had brain surgery. And he actually blamed the entire haunting and everything that everyone experienced, including the neighbors, on my dad's brain surgery.
Sure, makes sense to me. I don't know.
Absolutely, Dave. Come on.
Well, now I will say this. The only aspect of that that makes sense to me is, you know, even Dr. Barry Taff, William Roll, some of the other big names involved in paranormal research have found that connections to epilepsy and brain issues have been recurrent in most of these paranormal situations. So could it be that maybe your father was always nursing this and he was working as the conduit without knowing? I don't know that that's necessarily even something that could be easily dismissed. So your hater may be onto something. It may have something to do with your father, but working more as a harmonic resonance, bringing about this haunting, the Smurl haunting, when we continue. I'm Dave Schrader, your host, and this is the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM.